This is the lecture for Biochem 421 for November
24, 2009. This is November 24, Tuesday. We're going to be starting off here on glycolysis. I don't have a pocket there. Starting off on glycolysis. Yeah, there's no pocket in my shirt. And then my...
What is my sweatshirt
today? This is what a world-class golfer wears. Or looks like.
Yes, absolutely.
World-class hack, actually. But, oh well. Sorry about the cord. It just is what it is. At any rate, so for those of you who are not here, Ken came up with a great knock-knock joke. Sorry, I shouldn't. It's not Ken's fault. All right, so I'll start off. Knock-knock. Toad. Told you should be here. That's it. Sorry. Really a bad joke, but that's okay. That's what we intended to inflict. And actually, it was very funny when Ken said it. Apparently, I can't say it nearly as well. Any other bad jokes to inflict on people? No bad jokes? See, they're going to be forced to listen to this because they can't fast forward through this. All right. Okay. Well, at any rate... Well, for those of you who are not here, I'm glad you had a great Thanksgiving. We're having a great time here. We're actually not in the lecture hall, is that correct? We're actually at the deli, is that right? Yeah, we're at the deli, and it's free food for everybody, is that right? Paid for by the provost. And yeah, so it's all good. Never mind. At any rate, so you have glycolysis out to look at it? Excellent. Let's go run through this. Oddly enough, you're only getting about 5% out of the energy possible out of glycolysis. So there's a lot more energy to be extracted. Where does that energy get extracted? Where's the rest of the energy that's possible? Where it comes out of where? The citric acid cycle, or Krebs cycle. That's exactly correct. Let's quickly run through this. I'd like for us to recall the enzymes of the glycolytic pathway, shall we? Glucose gets converted to glucose-6-phosphate by what enzyme? Hexokinase. Please note, if you would, there's actually two enzymes that does that, hexokinase and glucokinase. Hexokinase is ubiquitous throughout the body. Glucokinase is localized in the liver. Hexokinase has a relatively low KM. Glucokinase has a relatively high KM. Let me repeat that. Hexokinase is ubiquitous and has a relatively low KM. Glucokinase is located primarily in the liver and has a high KM. Here's the rationale for that. Hexokinase having a relatively low KM means that it saturates at a relatively low concentration of glucose. So the glucose that is in the blood and so on then can be readily trapped inside the liver by the use of hexokinase, because a little bit of glucose is enough to raise the activity level of the hexokinase so that it changes it to glucose-6-phosphate and traps the glucose in the liver. But what happens with a low KM enzyme? That means high concentrations of its substrate saturate it quickly. High concentrations of it saturate it quickly. So what do you do with that extra glucose that's in the blood? For example, Evan or me would go to, Cracker Barrel. That's it. Cracker Barrel has these great pecan pancakes. Ever had them? They're huge, but they have pecans scattered through. I love them. At any rate, you pour on the old syrup there, and you take a couple bites, and how fast is your glucose level rising in your blood eating pancakes smothered in that kind of syrup. I mean, yeah, you might as well just inject glucose directly into your bloodstream. Well, immediately with that high concentration of glucose in your blood, the hexokinase is already completely saturated. It gets saturated very quickly. How do you remove that glucose that continues to climb in your blood? Well, that's where the second enzyme that you find in liver called glucokinase comes in. It has a lower KM. That means it's saturated at a... It takes a higher concentration of glucose to saturate it than the KM, than hexokinase, and therefore it begins to operate to help trap the glucose from the blood in the liver cells as glucose-6-phosphate. What do you think the fate of that glucose-6-phosphate is in the liver tissue? Yes. Did I just, yeah. Did I not say that again?
No.
Oh. Well, then I'm making a mistake. It is the glucokinase that has the high KM. Man. And the hexokinase has a low KM. And the hexokinase saturates easily. At low concentrations, I should say. Glucokinase saturates at high KM. So you can simply say at normal levels of glucose in the blood, hexokinase is able to move the glucose from the blood into the liver. At high levels of glucose in the blood, hexokinase is saturated and glucokinase begins to take over, become more active, and help trap the extra glucose as glucose-6-phosphate in the liver. But it doesn't do this in other tissues because there's not much glucokinase in other tissues. I think the only other tissue that has any kind of glucokinase in it may be the brain, but I'm not sure there either. I don't think that's the case. At any rate, so that's the story of the first enzyme, hexokinase and glucokinase. What's the next enzyme after glucokinase, after hexokinase? Phosphoglucoisomerase, and changes what to what? G6 into what? F6, is that correct? Then what's the next enzyme? Phosphofructokinase. This is the first committed step. This is highly regulated. It's called PFK1. PFK1. After PFK1, what happens? What's the product of PFK1? Fructose 1,6-bisphosphate. What is the fate of fructose 1,6-bisphosphate? It gets acted upon by an enzyme named fructose 1,6 gets acted upon by an enzyme named what? Nope. Aldolase. No, you didn't. Did she just say aldolase? Oh, I've never heard it called fructose 1,6-bisphosphatase aldolase. I've just heard call it aldolase. And that's what it's called there? Okay. Aldolase, yes, thank you very much. And that breaks that 6-carbon unit up into how many carbons? Into how many units? Two. What are the two names? Dihydroxyacetone phosphate, also abbreviated to what? DHAP, and what's the other compound? Which is the abbreviation for? 3-phosphate. What's the fate of glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate? It then moves down the glycolytic pathway, is that correct? What's the fate of DHAP? It's isomerized into what? G3P by what enzyme? Triosphosphate isomerase. So after this point, how many G3Ps are there actually? Two. And so they're going through the processes. So there's two of these, and so everything is doubled. So what's the enzyme that then acts on glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate? What's the name of it? G3P dehydrogenase. Okay. And that makes then, what's the product of that reaction? Okay, and what enzyme acts on that? phosphoglycerate kinase. Actually, this is an interesting one. This kinase then actually takes ADP and makes it into what? ATP. You're phosphorylating stuff, but it's not just a regular protein. You're actually phosphorylating ATP. ADP. And then what's okay, and that gives you a 3-phosphoglycerate. What's the next enzyme after 3-phosphoglycerate? What acts on 3-phosphoglycerate? Okay, and that changes that 3PG into what? 2PG. What acts on 2PG? Enolase. And that makes it into what? PEP. All right, again, a gold mine if I can figure out how to market it. What does PEP stand for? Correct. Now then, finally, the last enzyme of the glycolytic pathway is called what? Nope. Pyruvate kinase. Pyruvate kinase. What? He said something else. She said it right. No, you're right. He was wrong. I was listening to him. I'm sorry. I apologize. Yes. You guys are all right, whoever said kinase. Pyruvate kinase. Okay, and so the final product of this is what? Pyruvate. But how many pyruvates?
Two.
How many carbons does each pyruvate have? Three. So how many carbons do we start out with glucose? How many do we end up down here? Six. But of course, pyruvate is much more oxidized than is glucose. And the difference between the reduced glucose and the oxidized pyruvate we've extracted as energy. Two forms. What are the two forms of energy we've extracted as? ATP and NADH. That's correct. All right, so what are the fates of pyruvate then? That's the next interesting thing. So we've gone through that. What's the fate of what are the fates of pyruvate? Here are the fates of pyruvate. All right. What does the let's look starting on the left at the fates of pyruvate? Aerobic conditions, ladies and gentlemen. What does that mean? Aerobic conditions. Yeah, sufficient oxygen is present. All right. And so what happens here is that first enzyme, pyruvate going to acetyl-CoA, what's that enzyme name, by the way? Right here, that enzyme. Pyruvate to acetyl-CoA, what's the enzyme name? Pyruvate dehydrogenase, that's exactly correct. And it takes CoASH. What is the vitamin that is in part in CoASH? What vitamin is in CoASH? What vitamin is in the structure of CoASH? Nope. Well, B3. What's another name for B3? Pantothenic acid. B3? No, B3 is... B3, you got me going. I know it's pantothenic acid is in the structure of CoASH. All right, so you got acetyl-CoA come in here. And this works as long as there's plenty of oxygen. Why do you need oxygen for the citric acid cycle to work? Electron acceptor. That's correct. What actually are the direct products out of the citric acid cycle? What are actually the products out of the citric acid cycle? These are only approximate. Of course, we get carbon dioxide out of it a couple different places. Is that right? Actually, these are not the right places. But anyway, what else do we get out of it? These are not in the right places. And down here, there's actually a GTP, which gets made into an ATP. All right, so you get three NADHs. You get one FADH2 and one ATP, and you lose the two carbon dioxides that come off. So what are the fates of the NADHs here and the FADs? Where do they go? Electron transport system. And what's the theory behind the electron transport system? Right, so you got NADH coming in here. NADH making NAD plus. So these electrons then start bouncing along here. By the way, there's two of them. And eventually you have oxygen here And you get water, and these electrons, hydrogen ion plus oxygen, O2, you make water, but the electrons have come from the NADH. Would you agree with that? So the ultimate receptor of these electrons from NADH is oxygen, and it makes what? Water. Okay? So, obviously, if you want this process, this electron flow to work, you have to have what present? Oxygen. If you've overexerted and your energy demand is more than the oxygen can be carried by the circulation, you end up having a buildup of these electrons right in here, and the whole process begins to slow down. So you need plenty of oxygen right here in order for the electron acceptors to take the NADHs. What does the NAD plus then go to? If the electrons are actually dumped, where does this NAD plus go to then? It goes back here to the citric acid cycle to be recycled. Okay, so that's where it goes to. Now, so since there's plenty of oxygen present, we're making tons and tons and tons of energy. Of course, what happens is the electrons pass through these electron things here. What's happening to the hydrogen ions? They're being pumped into the intermembrane region, is that right? And what happens to that? Well, they then pass back through the ATP synthase and make ATP. Agreed? That's the model? Okay. ADP, ATP. All right. That's how that works very quickly. But, of course, as you know, if you've strained and you're no longer, you have exceeded your oxygen-carrying capacity, cells begin to exist under anaerobic conditions. And in eukaryotes, this anaerobic condition then takes that pyruvate, because this whole process begins to slow down, pyruvate begins to build up, and this aerobic conditions, especially in contracting muscles, you begin to take pyruvate and make it into lactate. Can someone tell me what lactate is? What's the structure of lactate? What's the structure of pyruvate? Is anybody out there today? There's pyruvate. What's the structure of lactate? What's happening right here? Is pyruvate being reduced or oxidized by what the chemical reaction that's going on there? Being reduced. That probably means that that ketone is going to be made into a what? Alcohol. All right. So there it is. This is pyruvate. And here is lactate. It's a CH3. Lactate is a CH3, CHOH, then a COO minus, the carboxylic acid group. So the whole point then is, why would you make lactate? Lactate actually, in large enough quantities, is toxic. And the presence of lactate actually causes some pain in muscle tissue. So why would you want to make that? Why would you want to do this? What's the deal? Regenerate NAD+. Thank you very much. Now, why is regenerating NAD+ so crucial? Where does that NAD+ go to? It goes back to glycolysis right there. If that NAD plus is not there, glycolysis shuts down. And what happens if glycolysis shuts down? Cell dies. That's just it. It's so central to the metabolism of the cell that if the glycolysis is shut down or inhibited by any significant amount, it will die. The cell will literally die. And so rather than die, the body has come up with another method to make a less toxic material called lactate that allows the NAD plus to be recycled. Okay? And if you have gotten to the point where there's so much lactate that NAD plus is beginning to be hindered, you're probably too exhausted, too achy to even begin running. And the body begins to slow down and go into self-protect mode. Okay, so the lactate changes the pH of the muscle tissue, and that changes the efficiency of the contraction, and your muscles begin to tighten up just as a self-protective mechanism. But the production of NAD plus here is required in order to make sure the glycolysis can continue. That's the only reason lactate is formed. All right, now, what happens over here? Now, I want you to circle this, or right here, circle the yeast. Circle yeast. In other words, the third condition is under anaerobic conditions, but it only exists in yeast. This is called alcoholic fermentation. Alcoholic fermentation. I've heard also this called lactate fermentation. Lactate fermentation, for reasons I can't explain, that middle one. There are two enzymes, neither one that are shown here in detail, but there are two enzymes that are responsible for the breakdown of pyruvate into carbon dioxide and ethanol. And again, the purpose of it is primarily the same. The production of ethanol allows for the creation of NAD plus to keep glycolysis going. Now, name the kinds of yeast. If I were to use as a source of sugar, if I were to use as a source of sugar grapes, there we go. If I was going to use grapes as a source of sugar, what kind of alcoholic beverage have I just made? Wine. If I use hops and barley, what kind of alcoholic beverage have I used?
Beer.
What if I've used rice? What alcoholic beverage have I used? Sake. If I use cane sugar, not gin, rum. What if I used, is it wheat or corn? Corn, and then incubated the corn in oaken barrels. What am I making? Whiskey, if I distill it. So what's happening? What are these yeasts doing? Are all those, is the wine and the sake and so on open to the atmosphere? Or are they closed off, bottled off? Closed off. Why? Because it forces the yeast then to do what? Anaerobic respiration, which then forces them to make the ethanol. Now, oddly enough, we have been using ethanol for what? Rubbing alcohol and also for a hand sanitizer, is that right? Well, yeast are just as susceptible as bacteria to alcohol. So what's going on here? Well, the yeast, without oxygen, are desperate to live. They have a drive to live just like any other living organism. They're willing to produce small amounts of ethanol, which is toxic to them, in order to survive. But of course, if you continue to allow this the bottle to be corked, will they ever have enough oxygen? No. And what they will eventually make is they will make enough ethanol to poison themselves. So just fermenting wine, you will only get a certain percentage of alcohol before that alcohol will kill the yeast actually producing the alcohol. Typically, wine's between 15 and 20% alcohol before the yeast gets killed. So wine, which is not a distilled alcohol, beer, which is not a distilled alcohol, you know, all have percentages less than 20% max, or 40 proof. Right. But what happens, of course, you have this hard liquor, like whiskey, and so on. How do they get that hard liquor? What do they have to do to the original material? They have to distill it. Distilled alcohol, distilled beverages, alcoholic beverages, or anything above 40 proof has been distilled in order to increase the concentration of the alcohol in it. Because 15 to 20% kills the yeast that's actually making the wine. All right, now if you use a cork, this, and I'm not a wine aficionado, but if you use a cork, so on, you typically are going to find that the carbon dioxide seeps past the cork and you have wine. If you seal it so it's not permeable to carbon dioxide, you can sometimes make a beverage that has a carbon dioxide dissolved in it, which makes it a little bubbly. Champagne, perhaps? Absolutely. I don't know the exact nature of how champagne's made, but I think that's one way it is made. They trap the carbon dioxide, and they get champagne out of it. All right, but again, the bottom line is that at a certain point, the yeast kills itself trying to survive by making ethanol. All right, so you need to know those three conditions. What are the chemical principles? First reaction, hexokinase, glucokinase. Primary reaction, you're using up ATP to make a high-energy intermediate to send it down the roller coaster. All right, I don't know what these bottom two bullets are. You can just forget about the bottom two bullets. Let's go ahead. Now, again, they're going through details we've already gone through. We're not going to worry about that. Hexokinase. All right. Here it is. First step in glycolysis, delta G is large and negative. Hexokinase and glucokinase act to phosphorylate glucose and keep it in the cell. Km for glucose is 0.1 millimolar. Cell has 4 millimolar glucose, so hexokinase is normally active. So this is Km for the hexokinase of glucose is 0.1 millimolar. So the hexokinase, that means by normally active. Notice, again, the Km for the hexokinase is 0.1 millimolar. What is also happening? If I have the substrate, or glucose, is exactly 0.1 millimolar, how fast is the enzyme moving? If the substrate concentration equals the Km, what's happening to the Vmax? It's what? One half. So in other words, the Km for glucose for hexokinase is 0.1 millimolar. If the concentration in the cell is 0.1 millimolar, hexokinase is moving at what rate? Half Vmax. Half Vmax. Half Vmax. But is it 0.1 millimolar? No, it's what? 4. So do you think it's probably pretty much past half Vmax and well on its way toward Vmax, right? All right, well, that's the normal value of glucose in the cell is 0.4 millimolar. Well, when you eat a donut, your blood sugar levels go up a lot higher than 4 millimolar. I mean, you could almost get your blood sticky with how sweet it can be. So when I say hexokinase is normally active, that's an understatement. It's probably pretty much maximally active. Well, what happens when extra glucose comes along from your diet? Well, the glucokinase that exists in your liver has a Km of 10 millimolar. So what does that mean? If normal is 4 and Km is 10 for glucokinase, at 4 millimolar, how fast, what's the velocity of that glucokinase? It's much less than what? Vmax. Yeah, much less than half Vmax. Because it takes 10 millimolar before glucokinase gets to Vmax, half Vmax. So, all right, only turns out it's rich in glucose. So that's why hexokinase and glucokinase together regulate glucose levels in the blood in the liver. Remember? Remember the liver is a glucose buffer? It's a glucose buffer. It's designed to maintain glucose levels within a range in the blood. And the glucokinase and hexokinase are part of that regulation. Hexokinase is regulated, allosterically inhibited by glucose 6-phosphate, but it is not the most important side of regulation of glycolysis. Why? All right. The reason why it's not the most important side of glycolysis is because it's not a committed step. You actually have not this is a reversible process because of other enzymes that exist. All right, now, so what happens if you make glucose 6-phosphate? It can't get out of the cell. Can't pass through easily. There are no glucose 6-phosphate carrier proteins. What did I just say? There are no what? Correct. Are there proteins that carry glucose? Yes. In the muscles, there is no glucose 6-phosphatase. In the muscles, there is no glucose-6-phosphatase. Let me repeat that one more time. In the muscles, there's no what? Glucose-6-phosphatase. What does glucose-6-phosphatase do? Takes glucose-6-phosphate and makes it into what? It's a phosphatase. What is it doing? Is it adding a phosphate or removing a phosphate? Oh, all right. Never mind. I should stop talking. It's just tough. All right. Here we go. Liver. Hexokinase. Glucokinase. ATP. ADP. You get... When I have this, this should be glucose here, not liver. At any rate, let me cross out glucose. Cross out liver, put in glucose. Above this, put liver. Okay, underline it. Glucose, under that, and we'll make glucose 6-phosphate. Now then, guess what? In the liver, there's another enzyme that reverses this process. It's called glucose 6-phosphatase. And it takes a glucose-6-phosphate and makes it into what? Glucose. And the glucose then has a carrier that allows it to leave the liver. What did I just say? In the liver, there's a carrier protein that allows glucose to come in, allows glucose to go out, all depending on the concentration of the glucose. Called GLUT4. There's a variety of glucose transporters. Muscle. Okay, glucose. You got the hexokinase. You don't have the glucokinase. You make G6P. You got your ATP here going to ADP. Shoop. Oh, good night. And so... ATP, boom, ADP, etc. Now, muscle. I want you to put a big circle there and put it. And notice there's nothing there for the reverse. There's no phosphatase, glucose-6-phosphatase in muscle tissue. Therefore, you cannot export directly glucose. You can export glucose analogs, but you cannot export glucose from the muscle tissue. Once glucose gets in... it's trapped and can't get out because it gets made in glucose-6-phosphate and there's no phosphatase in muscle tissue. All right. So, let's take a look. Oh, this looks like a vaguely familiar outline. Glucose goes to glucose-6-phosphate. What are the various fates? Well, one of the fates is to do what? Pentose phosphate pathway where you make what? NADPH, what's NADPH used for? Anabolism. Okay, and what are the small sugars used for? Well, I know what a 5-carbon sugar is used for. That's called ribose. That's used for RNA, and there's some other things. 7-carbon sugar, ladies and gentlemen. There's no metabolic use for 7-carbon sugar except as an intermediate to rearrange these things. Then you, of course, have glucose 1-phosphate. It can go on to make glycogen, etc., and then glucosamine, etc., etc., of the stuff. Phosphoglucosamarase changes glucose-6 to fructose-6. No big deal. Skip this. Do you see the big word skip across there? Write it in. Skip this. I planned ahead. Okay, phosphofructokinase. Now, underline this one. We're going to study this one for the next 15 minutes. Phosphofructokinase is the committed step in glycolysis. Committed step, a large negative delta G means that PFK is highly regulated. All right, so what's the purpose of a dam on a river? Huh? What's the purpose of a dam on a river? Hold water.
Create a gradient.
Okay, there's the water. Here's downhill. Here's H2O. Okay, so notice the big difference in the water levels, right? When you have the big difference in these water levels, what can you extract out of this? Energy. But also, guess what else you can do? Since this is blocking it,
and you have spillways and gates and so on, you can what? You can regulate water flow with a dam. Okay? So at this same point, you have energy extraction that can go on, and you can regulate water flow or flow through this. Now, how hard is it to canoe upstream when you run into a dam? Yeah. You can't continue. You've got to find a different pathway around it. Well, that's exactly what's happening with the phosphofructokinase. If you want to go bypass that in gluconeogenesis, you have to use a new enzyme. All right, so it's got a large negative delta G, means PFK is highly regulated. Now, here's the regulation. ATP inhibits it. You must remember that. Phosphofructokinase 1, ATP inhibits it. But Dr. Novak, there's ATP in the cell. Yes. But that means the enzyme's constantly inhibited. Yes. Now, there's covalent means to regulate the enzyme activity, but as far as allosteric means, ATP inhibits it. But the presence of AMP overcomes the inhibition. So you actually now have two small molecules acting on that same enzyme. One of them is called ATP, which turns it and it's continually turned off unless it's turned on by AMP. What else turns it off? Citrate. Now, I'm not sure we're ever going to get to the point where I can tell you why citrate turns it off. Just suffice it to say the citrate comes from the citric acid cycle. And when the citric acid cycle is replete, meaning full of the intermediates, the citrate is extracted off to make fat in the cytoplasm. So high levels of citrate in the cytoplasm means you're going through fat biosynthesis, which means that the cell has lots of energy, which means do you need glycolysis? No. So citrate indicates a replete cell, replete with energy, and therefore you're going to inhibit the PFK to slow down the citric acid cycle. Fructose 2,6-bisphosphate is an allosteric activator. All right? So the presence of 2,6 increases its activity, allows more throughput, more flow of carbohydrate through that enzyme. PFK increases activity when energy status is low. PFK decreases activity when energy status is high. Well, there's the enzyme. No big deal. We've seen that before. Here is a reaction velocity. This is figure 18.8 on your handout. You've got the lower line, which is a sigmoidal curve. That's the response when there's relatively high levels of ATP. That enzyme is slowed down. Low levels of ATP allow the enzyme to fully accelerate. But what would happen if you have high ATP? Where is that? Well, anyway. So, going on to the next thing, is this fructose 2,6-bisphosphate. Notice if you would, with no fructose 2,6-bisphosphate, a small sugary molecule, you see this nice sigmoidal curve that shifted to the right, which is an increase in activity. Which is a decrease in activity, pardon me. But with higher levels of fructose 2,6-bisphosphate, the enzyme shifts to the left, which means it increases activity with smaller and smaller amounts of its own substrate. So shifting this curve to the left turns on the enzyme. Shifting it to the right turns off the enzyme. Shifting this activity curve to the right turns on the enzyme. Shifting it to the left turns it off. No, I just said that backwards, didn't I?
Which one do you want?
What does the evidence tell you? When it's closer to the zero, when the curve is shifted to the left, it's turned on. When it's shifted to the right, it's turned off. I apologize for that. All right, that's the last I'm going to say of it. That's with this fructose 2,6-bisphosphate. Let's go on to the next graph. Okay. This, I love this one, 1810. Fructose 2,6 bisphosphatase decreases the inhibition of phosphofructokinase due to ATP. All right. So, relative velocity. Notice what's on the horizontal line. The dependent variable is the what? ATP concentration. As the ATP concentration goes up, what's supposed to happen to PFK? Is the activity supposed to go up or down? Down. Is that what you see here? As we increase the ATP, is the activity going down? Yeah. Yeah. As it increases past a certain point, it goes back down. That's correct. What prevents that from returning so quickly? What prevents it from turning itself off, turning the fructose off? What's this small molecule? 2,6-BP. The presence of F26BP prevents ATP from turning off phosphofructokinase. So F26BP is an activator. F26BP is an activator of PFK1. It's an activator. Where in the world does that come from, Dr. Novak? I've never heard of that enzyme before. I've never heard of it before. I mean, that's the most ridiculous thing. I've never even seen any kind of graph or anything talking about this. This just drives me nuts. You just keep coming up with this stuff that I've never heard before. Oh, wait. Wait a minute. I think we just had a quiz over this. Do you remember this quiz that you just took? Oh, it's due today. Outstanding. The puzzled looks go, something's due today? What? Well, it's, if you got it done? Okay. I'm going to work backwards from this. This is what cell type? Oh, I can't. I can't use my pointer on Word. Can you believe that? Just ridiculous. I have to take the next thing off. Okay. Now, what kind of cell am I in? What kind of cell am I in? Liver. Okay. This part up here is extracellular space. What's that material up there called? Glucagon. Glucagon. Insulin and glucagon work in synchrony to adjust the energy values or energy load in your blood. High levels of insulin and low levels of glucagon say that the blood needs energy. High levels of glucagon, low levels of insulin means that the blood is full of energy. Energy equivalents, glucose and fat. All right, so I want to show you that. But I want to go down here and let's go down right down here. Oh, look at this. Oh, over here, this is protein kinase A. And it's got four subunits. Two of them regulatory, two of them what? Catalytic. Oh, and look, there's what? Cyclic AMP. Oh, my goodness. Can we be integrating this now? Can this is suddenly, we're going to put all these pieces together in the last couple days of class? Yes. This whole clue, we've been trying to get to this the entire semester. The integration of regulation and metabolism. Now, PFK1, what's PFK1 do? This fructose 6-phosphate to fructose 1,6-phosphate, this is a fragment of what pathway? It's a fragment of what pathway? Glycolysis. Boy, he's getting irritated. PFK1 is a highly regulated one, is the controlling enzyme in that pathway, PFK1. What controls that enzyme? Well, let's take a look. It seems to have a plus sign there, which means it's stimulated. So if we follow that dotted line back there, what enzyme, what small molecule is that? 2,6-bisphosphate. So that small molecule, fructose 2,6-bisphosphate, turns on PFK1. Does that make sense? Have we seen that before? I can't show it to you. Have we seen it before? Yes. What do we just see here? What does this small molecule do? What is that? F26BP is doing what? It's stimulating the activity of the phosphofructokinase. Kinase. It's preventing ATP from turning it off. So I want high levels of 2,6-bisphosphate to turn on PFK1, let's say. But now how do I get high levels of fructose 2,6-bisphosphate? Well, I don't know. Maybe I want small levels of it. Before I go on and describe what I want, I have to tell you a piece of information about this enzyme. You see this particular enzyme right here? What I'd like for you to do is just circle that enzyme and say one protein, two activities. This whole thing, one protein, two activities. One protein, how many activities?
Two.
One of the activities is called PFK2. The other activity is called fructose 2,6-bisphosphatase. Whether one is turned on and the other is turned off depends entirely on the fact, on the issue of whether the protein is phosphorylated or not. If this protein, which contains how many activities, is not phosphorylated, what activity does it have? PFK2. What apparently does that activity do? It takes fructose 6-phosphate and makes it into what? Which then in turn does what to the PFK1? Turns it on. Let me repeat. This enzyme, this protein with two enzyme activities, if it's not phosphated, behaves as a PFK2 activity, which makes 2,6-bisphosphate. The presence of 2,6-bisphosphate turns on the what? PFK1 and turns on what? Glycolysis. Now, if this PFK2, if this protein is in fact phosphorylated, it shifts from being a PFK2 activity to having the phosphatase activity. Notice the phosphate there. What does this activity do? Well, it takes that fructose 2,6-bisphosphate and converts it into what? And so does it reduce the level of the 2,6-bisphosphate? Yes. So when this protein is phosphorylated, 2,6 goes down. When this protein is not phosphorylated, the amount of 2,6 goes... Okay. Let's do this again. Let's take a look. Fructose 2,6-phosphate. If that amount goes up, what happens to glycolysis? Turns it on because it turns on what enzyme? If this fructose 2,6-bisphosphate concentration drops, what happens to the PFK1? Its activity does what? Drops, and what happens to glycolysis? It slows down. It doesn't shut down, but it slows down. Okay? So how much fructose 2,6-bisphosphate, how do we know how much we have? It depends on the relative activity of a protein that has two activities with it, whether it's not phosphorylated or phosphorylated. If this is not phosphorylated, are you making fructose 2,6? If it's not phosphorylated, are you making fructose 2,6? Yes. And what's happening to glycolysis? It's turned on. Now, what depends, what changes whether it's phosphorylated or not phosphorylated? Well, it turns out to be this protein called, which is also another name for, what's the older term? It's exactly correct. Cyclic AMP-dependent protein kinase. Same protein, different names. Same name. I mean, two different names for the same protein. Protein kinase A is also called cyclic AMP-dependent protein kinase. Okay? Now, we know a little bit about that protein kinase A, don't we? We know it has how many subunits? Four. How many catalytic subunits? How many regulatory subunits? When there are four subunits are together, are the catalytic subunits active? When they're apart, are the catalytic subunits active? How do you make them fall apart? Exactly, cyclic AMP. When high levels of cyclic AMP exist, they bind to the regulatory subunits, the catalytic subunits fall off and do their business. Now, you're going to have to wait, because I got one, I'll do one more minute. Glucagon indicates the indicates that there's a high level of energy in the blood. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So high levels of glucagon hit this transducer, increase the levels of cyclic AMP. That increases the activity of protein kinase A, making this active, shifting this to making the phosphatase active, which breaks down to fructose 6-2-bisphosphate and slows down glycolysis. That means that glycolysis means that the glucose that's coming in is not going to be used for energy, but it's probably going to be used for glycogen synthesis. So the glucagon shuts off glycolysis in this method in the liver tissue, because this kind of behavior is specific tissue by tissue. So we'll review this very quickly again on Monday of next week. You guys have a great day and a safe holiday, and we'll see you then.